Hi, everyone. Welcome back to an episode of JNPO Classic here on WrestlingObserver.com. I am Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website, host of Josh Nason's Punch-Out. My apologies for not getting these up on time as I had planned. Really no excuse. I was in North Carolina for 4 or 5 days, and then I was didn't really feel that great for a week. I was a little sick after that. A lot of beer drinking going on down there, and I probably caught something on the plane. Anyway, I was kind of out of commission here for a week and a half, but no excuses. These things should have been up, and hopefully we'll get back to a little bit more normal schedule. So over the next couple of days, I'm going to catch up and post some of these shows so you can hear them. Also, hopefully I have a return to JNPO, I guess the proper edition, coming up here on Friday with everything going on in the world of MMA and also boxing as well. Apparently now we're going to be talking about that. So I'll be getting back to that hopefully on Friday with a new edition. So I appreciate your patience as we figure things out, and hopefully things will improve here in the next few weeks. So this edition, this was recorded on, again, if you're new to this, this is my look back at my time at the WJAM MMA show, a weekly radio show that I did on ESPN New Hampshire, WJAM. Back in 2011-2012, so I thought it'd be kind of fun to pull these out of the archives, post them on the site, and see what was going on 6 years ago. And this was a fun edition of the show. We talked to, this was originally aired on June 2nd, 2011. We did an interview with a current pro wrestler now, Chuck O'Neill, who works a lot of New England indies, and we did an interview with him. This was after the Tough Lesnar JDS season. So he had just come off a loss against Tony Ferguson. Obviously, he is one of the best lightweight fighters in the world now. So it's kind of crazy to look back at this 6 years ago. So Chuck O'Neill did an interview of the show. And one thing that I forgot about, we talked about his tough experience in fighting Tony Ferguson in the semifinal. Tony was not a well-liked guy during that whole show. And I need to go back and look at some of the clips. I completely forgot. He basically had the whole house turn against him at one point, basically kind of calling out a guy for retiring, mocking his family and kids, I believe. Just some really kind of like bad stuff that I remember about. And it led to some great TV, but no one liked him. So we talked to Chuck about that, about having Brock Lesnar as a coach, obviously Lesnar and JDS being the coaches that season. And we talked, it was a really fun interview. He was really easygoing. And somebody that I would like to actually talk to again at some point, kind of see what he's up to after that time. He didn't last that long in the UFC, but did. This was going leading into the Tough finale show. He was fighting Chris Cope, he of the Woo, if you remember that from that show. And another guy didn't actually last too long in the UFC. But fun interview, so you'll listen to that. This also came on the same day. We had a lot of breaking news. Other things going on. We had GSP versus Nate Diaz was finally announced. The fight was supposed to be in Las Vegas. This is how time just kind of went nuts here. 6 years ago, supposed to be in Las Vegas. We obviously know that didn't happen. And this at the time, Diaz was the Strikeforce welterweight champion. Remember, the UFC had just bought them earlier in that year. So that was kind of a big storyline. We had almost a title versus title fight. So there's a lot of questions about with Diaz. Kind of like where was he? Was he going to be allowed to kind of go back and forth between Strikeforce and the UFC? So there's all these questions about that. We talked a lot about UFC 130 that just happened. Really kind of boring show. Howard Board Rampage. I talked a lot about the light heavyweight division, some of my frustrations with that. And there's a lot of discussion at the time about whether Roy Nelson was actually going to cut weight and go down light heavyweight. Dana White was talking a lot about that. There seemed to be some a little bit of steam behind that. So we'll see if we'll hear about that discussion. Obviously, the interview with Chuck O'Neill. And then we started previewing the Tough finale show itself, featuring Ferguson versus Ramsey Nijem. And also a main event that we could not wait for, which was Clay Guida versus Anthony Pettis. And we all know how that fight turned out. So without further ado, let's get to the June 2nd, 2011 edition of the WJAM show featuring Chuck O'Neill.
You're at the starting line of another hour of New Hampshire's best sports on WJAM, The Game.
We had UFC last Saturday, more UFC this Saturday. and we talked to Massachusetts native and tough semifinalist Chuck Cold Steel O'Neill. It's Thursday, June 2nd, 2011, and the MMA show on Sports Radio WGAM The Game is live. Hey everyone, Josh Nason, PJ Hewitt, coming to you from the WGAM studios downtown Nashua, New Hampshire. And like Bruce Buffer says, PJ, it's time.
It's time!
Tonight, we're going to talk about a so-so UFC 130, a preview this Saturday's Ultimate Fighter 13 finale, and like I said, we're going to talk to Chuck O'Neill, who's going to be fighting on that card, talk about his experiences on Tough. We're going to talk about his fight this Saturday at the big stage, first time in the UFC in front of a crowd. It's going to be a great interview. It's going to be a great night. And we have some breaking news. Well, breaking news from yesterday. There's my music. The fight that Dana White said would not happen, PJ, it is going to happen.
Well, he said it wouldn't happen in Montreal.
Well, he said there's no plans for it. There was all types of controversy and scuttlebutt and balderdash. GSP versus Nick Diaz is happening this October in Las Vegas, Nevada. GSP Diaz, 170-pound championship on the line. Immediate reaction.
Excited for it. They called it a super fight, and as I called it on the blog, it's the super fight to end all super fights since the last super fight. It's really good. I like the fact that it's going to be the first UFC versus Strikeforce, that this is the way that they're breaching, that thing there with, with the biggest name.
Bridging the gap.
Thank you. Just trying to look for the words. It's fantastic. This is one of these, again, it's going to be one of these fights that it's going to be hyped up crazy for, 2 months leading into it. You're probably going to start seeing promos for it this Saturday. You know, they love to do that, just promote things that are forever away, especially something this big. Mm-hmm. But really excited for it. Long time coming.
UFC 137 will be the event. Las Vegas, Nevada will be the place. October 29th. So October, they've gone to this formula before. Last year was Brocktober, if you'll remember. I don't know if it'll be Nicktober or not.
Hope not.
If the spike will help promote that. But it's going to be just looking at Wikipedia. I don't know if this is verified. It's going to be for the UFC Welterweight Championship and Strikeforce Welterweight Championship. I don't think there's any plans to merge the titles at this time.
Would that mean, obviously GSP wouldn't go to Strikeforce.
Correct. So here's...
He would be both?
Well, I don't know. Again, it's Wikipedia, so it might be up in the air. So here's kind of the background, the deal, all this stuff. Nick Diaz is a champion of Strikeforce. Strikeforce is an organization that UFC or Zuffa bought back several months ago. So here's the deal. Strikeforce has a deal with Showtime, and Showtime is not really they have a brand they want to protect. They don't want to seem like lame ducks with this promotion. However, the UFC own Strikeforce and has an opportunity to put together these fights. Initially, there was some talk about putting it on Showtime, but I never thought that was really serious because of all the money that could be generated from pay-per-view. So then there was talk this past week of Strikeforce or Showtime basically saying, well, we don't want that to happen. So what went and happened, UFC signed Diaz or Zuffa re-signed Diaz to an 8-fight deal that allows him to fight in both promotions. So a brand new contract. So they kind of got around that. The question is if he loses, does that hurt him in Strikeforce? Does that help him? And if he wins, then what? He's a champion of both, but does he defend both? And again, the talent levels are a lot different in both organizations as well. So unique situations depending on the winner. But regardless, we're finally going to get a really great fight.
We hope so, at least. And especially coming off this past weekend, I know we're going to get to this in a minute, and it was sure to be a letdown. UFC 130 coming off of UFC 129 with that was so hyped up in the biggest event in GSP event, but this past weekend
UFC 130 also live from Las Vegas Memorial Day weekend, a car that was pretty much ripped apart a little bit by Gray Maynard.
Well, injuries just destroyed that card.
Yeah, injuries really hurt the main event, the lightweight title fight. So in its place was Rampage Jackson versus Matt Hamill, a fight that Jackson did not seem that motivated to promote ahead of time. Just was really odd and just not, he didn't really generate the hype needed to. We talked about that. Getting in the fight itself, Rampage Jackson wins by unanimous decision. Both PJ and I were wrong. We both picked Hamill to win.
I expected a little more out of him, but
Hamill picked a really bad night to be really bad. He basically shot him for takedowns. His bread and butter, as they say, is wrestling, and could not get any takedowns to get anything started. Striking, could not hang with Rampage, who I guess has a fractured hand, and had a fractured hand going into that fight. And Rampage just swinging for the fences. And once Hamill realized he couldn't get that takedown, there was not much else he could do for 15 minutes. He was essentially done.
Yeah, they kind of danced around a little bit, and Matt Hamill just got beat up for 3 rounds. It wasn't a very exciting fight, but again, that I don't know if that has to do with just the fact that Rampage wasn't, you know, super, like you said, wasn't really promoting the fight. What didn't seem like he was getting up for it, even though he says, you know, he loves to fight. Fighting's his favorite thing in the world. It's the training that he doesn't like, and the training that kind of gets him down. But Matt Hamill, yeah, just looked really, really bad. And like you said, just could shot in a couple times, had this takedown stuffed, and then after that, just it's like he didn't know what to do.
A lot of fighters will get their chance at breaking through to the big time, the upper echelon. The question of whether or not they take that opportunity and kick it up to the next level, it's really up to them. Matt Hamill had his chance. I think we realize now what Matt Hamill is for sure. I think most people thought this going in that he was a good light heavyweight, but not an upper echelon guy. He had his chance to kind of sneak up into that conversation, put himself there. He didn't. I think now we realize what he is. He's a mid-level guy. I don't think he's going to get any better. Probably not going to get any worse. He is what he is.
Yeah, and he's 34 years old, so it's not like he's going to, you know, he's still not like one of those 23, 24-year-old guys who are like, wow, this guy could be fighting for another 10 years. It's, he'll probably fight for a few more years, pick up some good, you know, some good wins along the way, and probably lose a couple more times. But I don't expect much from Matt Hamill. I don't see him really progressing, especially in that stacked division.
Are you excited to see Rampage Jackson fight again? I'm not.
Not if he fights like that, no. If it's a different opponent, you know, maybe if he's fighting for a title, he puts a little bit more effort into his training. Maybe it's a little more exciting with a guy like if he gets an opportunity to face John Jones for the title. I don't know. There's still a bunch of things that need to work themselves out with Phil Davis and Rashad Evans before they announce that. So it'll be interesting to see. But I think with a fighter who he thinks is in his class, and he did not think, and his camp did not think, Matt Hamill, and rightly so, that they did not think Matt Hamill was in his class. And it proved that. He just was, you could see how much better he was than Matt Hamill in that fight.
But wasn't that Rashad Evans? You know, I mean, that was a blood feud, and he didn't, he lost by decision in that one too. And I thought looked average. I guess it goes back.
Maybe it's just like that. It's this part of his career now.
Yeah. And I think it is, but I think the way that they're promoting him is like that. He's still this, I guess any fighter's dangerous, right? This thing about, you know, Rampage can do this and do that.
And he still has the one punch knockout power. I think
he does, but a lot of guys do. I don't know. Yeah. You mentioned 205 being stacked. I don't think the UFC, their 205 division is stacked.
Well, top heavy, I should say. There's a lot of guys right there.
It's been hurt by a lot of guys now, like going to heavyweight. The 240 guys, right? The Cain Velasquez back in the past may have tried to cut to get down to a 205 or something. You talk about those stories. There's just not a lot of depth there. But people keep saying there is. There's really not. And there's guys that just they need to, that middle level needs to fill up a little bit more. It's still going to take time. They really, in my opinion, they haven't recovered from the guys like Liddell, Franklin, Couture, even those guys getting old, and they didn't really have a full set to just come in. This is just, I mean, it's just my opinion. 205, I think there's Jones, there's Evans, there's Rampage to a point, but again,
Machida,
he doesn't excite me either. He's a guy that he won his last fight, but he's a guy that he beat Couture, who a lot of people questioned, should he still be fighting anyway, right? But even before that, he essentially lost 3 fights in a row.
Yeah.
There's no guys that are on big streaks that, like Jones, right? There's not a lot of Jones. Bader, Ryan Bader's a guy that could get up in that
Shogun conversation.
Shogun.
I mean, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago too. I know there's names, but we talked about how there hasn't been that one fighter who win like 3-4, you know, defend the title 3-4 times in a row. Mm-hmm. It's been, you know, one fighter wins it, he defends, he loses the title. The first defense for that guy, he loses the title. And if like 5 fights in a row or something like that, I have to look it up. But
yeah, there's names. I want to see consistency from those names. I want to see Forrest Griffin in this next fight against Shogun. I want to see one of those two guys get dominant and just be like, I'm the man. I don't want to see decisions.
I think it's going to be Shogun who does that.
I don't want to see decisions, you know, and the decisions are part of it, but I want to see one of these guys go on a run like Jones did. And I realize Jones is a freak. I just want to see a guy take hold and be like, this is my division. I want to get that title and really mean it. I guess in 205, those other divisions, I see guys like that. I just, for some reason, there's just nothing in 205 right now. It's exciting for Davis, could be that guy. If Davis can learn how to really effectively strike, he's going to be a bad man for a long time. That's just me. I'm sure a lot of people probably don't agree, but that's me.
Yes. Yeah. He's something to prove though against Rashad.
Yes. Go to the co-main event, Frank Mir versus Roy Nelson. Mir winning by unanimous decision, 30-27, 30-27. One judge had 30-26. That's what I scored it as well. Roy Nelson gassed. He looked tired. Both guys looked tired near the end of the fight. I didn't hate this as much as some people did immediately after.
Dana White did not like it.
But then the next day backed off
because
that a little bit.
Of Nelson's condition, rather.
Yeah, so Nelson basically went in this with walking pneumonia. He was hospitalized a week after.
Is it anything like The Walking Dead?
Very similar.
Okay.
Very similar. He looked like The Walking Dead at the end of that fight.
Did he ever?
Mir was... It wasn't a blood fest or just a huge slug fest. It was two guys going at it. Mir got some good shots on him, especially elbows on the ground. But overall, Mir won, no closer to a title shot. And like I said, Uncle Dana was not very happy with this one initially. Less than thrilled with Roy Nelson and basically said, this guy has got to lose weight. They're supposed to have me and believe this week. And obviously that may be delayed because of the walking pneumonia. But Nelson's at the point now where Dana essentially is going to insist that he gets down to 240, 235, something in that range where it's, he can physically go. As he said, the fat guy gimmick was funny early on. It's not funny anymore.
No, especially after this fight. And Frank Mir, that's his second fight in a row now where he hasn't really been too impressive, you know, coming off the knockout of Mirko Krokop. And yeah, like you said, no closer to a title shot for him. He's just kind of going through the motions right now, it would seem. Roy Nelson, did he fight right at 265? Is he right at the
yes,
limit there?
Yes. Yep.
Because I was going to ask you if you thought it would be possible for him to cut down to light heavyweight.
Well, some people have brought that up, and
do you think there's 65 pounds or 60 pounds in that gut that he could get rid of?
I think it's possible. Whether or not he wants to complete, that's going to take a large commitment of time, right?
Yeah.
And effort. So the question, again, where does he think he's at in his career? Does he want to stay at heavyweight? He can hang with heavyweights. It's just a question of could he be even better if he cut down to around that 240 mark? And just, again, he has a giant gut. And this whole thing about, you know, he's obviously very athletic. He's a great jiu-jitsu player. He's a guy that can strike. He can knock people out. But it's the cardio and that weight that just, again, he's not fighting Kimbo Slice in there.
Right.
And he's beating guys that he beat at the stage of their career were not as advanced. He knocked out Brendan Schaub, but Brendan Schaub is still, I think he had 5 fights in his career.
Yeah.
Guys that were,
he's rebounded quite nicely.
Oh, yeah.
He's knocked off some good wins in a few wins in a row.
And he's fighting in August against Big Nog, Nogueira, in his return. So Brendan Schaub has obviously taken that loss and gone a completely different path. Nelson's at the stage now where essentially Dana White's going to insist, you got to get in better shape and give it a go. He could cut down to 205. My guess is he'll be down like around 240, 230 and kind of see where he is at that.
And I'm thinking maybe Cain Velasquez, he fights at 240.
He does.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's even if you're 25 pounds lighter than the guy and Cain proves that it's talent that can get the job done against Brock. So
yeah, Brock was 265 in that and
has to cut to make weight. And Shane Carwin's another guy who has to cut to make weight, 265. Mm-hmm. And I think it'd be good for Roy Nelson. I think for the UFC too, if he drops some weight, maybe fights one or two more times in heavyweight. If he's unsuccessful there, why not try to go down to light heavyweight and try to compete with those guys?
I agree. Also on the card, Stefan Struve fell like a giant skyscraper, losing to Travis Brown, first round knockout. This actually made ESPN's highlights, which was pretty interesting to see.
That was a nice knockout by Travis Brown.
Superman punch, boom, down.
Yeah, Struve had been a guy who got a couple wins in a row, was on a little bit of a streak, and I thought, expected, I had him actually winning that round. It was 4-11 or something, 4-30 into the first round.
4-11.
So I had him winning that round, and I thought, you know, he had a chance to win that fight too, but shows you how quickly a fight can end, especially coming in like that. And he just had his hands down for long enough, and Travis Brown caught him.
Speaking of Roy Nelson, a guy that Roy Nelson knocked out, Stefan Struve. Struve just, I think he's got to do something different.
I think he needs, we talked about Roy Nelson losing, I think he needs to gain weight.
He looked bigger. I think he just needs to completely change up his training. I believe he's still based in Sweden, if I remember right.
Sweden or Netherlands?
Netherlands. He needs to like be,
because he's from there. He's a Dutch guy.
Yeah. He needs to be in the States. Like he just needs to completely change everything up, because he's got legit talent. He's young enough to rebound from these type of losses, but you can't get knocked out. I mean, he's getting knocked out more frequently than you should at this stage. So
that's how he's losing his fights, is getting knocked out. He's not losing by decision.
And bad knock. Like, he'll get dropped.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I complete change of pace, I think, for him to switch that up. A guy we talked to last week, Rick Story. Our streak starts 1-0.
Yes, we want to know from guys who have having their fight. We'll find out this week with Chuck O'Neill, too.
Correct. I think we're going to go 2-0.
I think so.
Rick Story being Thiago Alves by unanimous decision, and looked really good in doing it. You know, Alves turned it on the third round, caught a knee, didn't really follow up.
A little
like
too late.
But Story held up striking. Story held up wrestling, controlling in the first two rounds. He won. He simply beat Thiago Alves 2-1 and simply won that fight.
Yeah, and he's a guy, he's starting to see like how complete of a fighter he is. He's not just a knockout guy, not just a ground guy, but he has the whole package. And with every fight, he's getting better and better and better. And I think it's probably, we almost time to see him against one of those upper echelon guys to see, like, really compare and see how well he fares.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because there was talk about him and John Fitch possibly getting it on later on this year. However,
Fitch is still hurt, though, isn't he?
He is. He's going to be out for roughly about 6 months. However, what I thought was interesting is Fitch said he changed his philosophy on taking any fight after talking to Rashad Evans. And Rashad basically said, you get to a certain point, you only fight a certain level of guy. So what Fitch said was, no, he didn't. He had no interest in fighting Rick Story. He wanted to fight guys. He said he would wait for a guy like GSP, wait for a guy like a Diaz. He wants to wait and fight a certain upper echelon guy, which is very interesting, because people do not like to watch John Fitch fight. He's a winner, but he's kind of what's considered a quote unquote boring winner, in that he's a wrestler, grinds guys down. And now he's essentially saying, you know what? I'm going to pick my spots. Dana's been critical of him before. I can't imagine this endeared himself to anyone in the offices, saying that I took a tip from Rashad, who Dana has ripped apart for that philosophy last year, and essentially just waiting and waiting and waiting. And now he's saying, you know, I'm going to wait. I can't imagine anyone thinks that's a good idea.
Well, I think John Fitch probably thinks in his head that he's earned it. I mean, if you look at his record and how many fights he's won over his time in the UFC, I think it's probably true, where he's getting up there and he's good enough. But like you said, he's one of those guys that just grinds you down. He's not an exciting fighter. He doesn't finish a lot of fights. And,
picking your spots. I don't know. I guess we'll see. Again,
very interesting.
When I first heard about that, I'm like, John Fitch is going to be out for a long time.
Dana White likes those guys who are like, I'll fight anybody. Put anybody in the cage with me and I will fight them. He likes that attitude. So, yeah, I can see how saying, nah, I'm not going to fight him, I want to wait, I can see how that would make them maybe not too happy.
Speaking of one of those guys, Brian Stann rounding out the paper.
Impressive.
Card. Brian Stann defeating George Santiago.
I thought it was Jorge, but they called him George.
George Santiago, a Sengoku transplant, making his UFC return. Stann defeated him second round TKO and is looking, he's on the fast track to being a star at 185. And you can kind of see the gears in motion for getting him ready potentially for a title fight. He wants to fight big guys now, and he's looking better and better every single fight out. And I tell you what, if Silva can beat Yushin Okami in August, I would love to see Anderson Silva, Brian Stann, 185-pound title, and see what happens.
You think he'd be the next guy up?
I think they'd like to do it. They'd love to do Chael Sonnen, but Chael Sonnen is
he's got his own problems.
He's one of the most interesting guys at 185 right now. He's a great story. Marine, well-spoken, a guy that men love him, women love him, men want to be just like him, you know, one of those type of guys. He's just awesome. And I think he's a guy that I think that would be a huge pay-per-view main event. Silva, who a lot of people still hold grudges against for that string of boring fights against the American hero, Brian Stann. You can't get any better than that.
No, you definitely have a pro Stann crowd, man. The crowd just absolutely loves him.
So going into the break in a few seconds, let's just actually quickly round out the card. Tim Boach being Kendall Grove by decision, bland fight. Kendall will probably get cut pretty soon. He just he just doesn't have it at 170 anymore. He's lost
four of his last six and six of his last 10 fights.
Not good. And Miguel Torres, Demetrius Johnson. Johnson beat Torres by unanimous decision, two rounds to one. I saw this for Torres. I thought Torres took the first two rounds.
I disagree. No.
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
I think Torres just got beat. Like, he did not look like his normal self.
Did you? He was on the ground trying submissions. He was going for. I mean, he was. If this
he was
this
active,
classic,
but I really don't think he did enough to win that fight.
PJ, you got to watch those first two.
I might have to watch the first.
Watch it with the sound off. Try that way. But just watching. I had not seen. I watched this fight actually Tuesday. And I watched it and I knew what happened. I went into it going completely blank because I don't have really allegiance to either guy. Kind of go in and watch. And I was like. Interesting. Okay. And I was just like, Torres seemed more active from the bottom, getting in more dangerous positions and making Johnson try to get out of them. I just saw Torres winning those first two rounds. You could argue he won the third too. I gave that one to Johnson, but yeah, I thought the Torres won two rounds to one.
I thought Johnson looked a little bit more aggressive, but hey, it's one of those things too. You see it right away. You have one opinion. Then sometimes you watch a fight again. You're like, really? That's the way I thought. Nah, it's different. But, I don't think he did enough. Maybe just in his stand-up, you know, I know he's trying to go for the submissions, but maybe he just didn't do enough, at least for me and I guess to the judges, to earn that victory.
So we're going to head to our first break of the evening. Coming up next, Chuck O'Neill, tough semifinalist, a guy that's fighting this Saturday night on Spike. We'll talk to him about everything, including Brock Lesnar. Coming up next, you're listening to the MMA Show on Sports Radio WGAM, The Game. We are back on the MMA Show, Tuesday night, June 2nd. Does not feel like June outside, but that's the way it is in New England these days. And someone that knows that is actually our guest tonight, someone I'm very excited to talk to. He was a semifinalist on this season of The Ultimate Fighter and a guy from Massachusetts. And this Saturday, Spike TV, you're going to be able to see him take on Chris Cope on the televised card. We're here with Chuck O'Neill. Chuck, how's it going tonight?
Good, man. Good. How are you?
Doing all right. So you, it's kind of weird, this whole reality TV show thing, right? So for weeks and weeks and weeks, we kind of knew the results and we'll talk about that in a minute. But did you happen to watch Wednesday night and kind of watch that semifinal fight back?
I actually got the video delivered to me out here at the Palms out in Vegas. I've been here since Tuesday and, it was pretty painful to watch. My head corner guy got to watch it for the first time. It was kind of cringing watching it. But it's good to watch tape on yourself.
So for those that have not seen it yet, obviously you fought Tony Ferguson, the guy that's making the finals this Saturday on Spike TV. Take us through that fight a little bit. Obviously going into it, you know, a lot of emotion, and Tony just really seemed to have the advantage on striking, and obviously he held in there for a while, but it just seemed like the combination of the strikes and leg kicks and all that just kind of eventually kind of took their toll.
Yeah, you know, going into the fight, I kind of kept my emotions in check and kind of left those at the door and tried to keep it professional in the fight. I mean, that's what I had to do. There's not a lot of mention of it. That was my fourth fight in 17 days. My body was definitely starting to wear down a little bit. I was feeling the back room. I felt the first round was pretty highly contended. It was real close. Tony just slightly edged me out in the first round, and then, you know, he just started taking over, slowing me down immensely with those inside leg kicks and, you know, just starting landing a lot of punches after that. And I felt shot, but I felt, you know, I'm going to stick this out and try to handle it like a man. But apparently my leg was thinking otherwise because I couldn't really stand on it after a little while.
Now, before the fight, Ferguson was mentioning how, you know, obviously he was hoping that you brought emotion into it. And we'll, you know, chat about that in a minute. But did you feel, will you bring that kind of that pent-up aggression from what had happened with Charlie Rader and Tony and that whole house incident? Did you bring that in with you, or were you able to shut that off and just really kind of get down to business and focus?
No, I was definitely just trying to get down to business and focus. You know, this isn't my first time at the rodeo, so to speak. You know, I've been fighting now, this 11 pro fights before the show, and that was my fourth fight on the show. I knew what I needed to do to go in there and fight properly, so I kept myself in check and just went out there and fought.
So you became a Dana White favorite throughout the course of the show. I'm certain you saw how much this guy loves you, maybe that Massachusetts connection. But so kind of to bring people in, you were on the show. You weren't originally on the show. You got on there as an alternate. You were brought in a little bit late. So, I mean, did you get the call? Were you in mass, or how did that whole thing work?
Well, I got flown out when everyone else did, and they put me up in the Palms. They all went to the Palace Station and did the whole team audition thing. And, you know, they called me that day, said, oh, sorry, you're going home. So I went back to Mass, and 2 days later they called and said, hope you didn't get too fat, we're bringing you back out. And so I had to give up my pizza I just ordered, and was on the next flight back out to Vegas. So it was a pretty wild trip.
So it's pretty crazy. You're walking in there, and all of a sudden you know that Brock Lesnar is your coach. Did you know that going into that, or did you happen to know just that moment when you walked in?
Yeah, I found out maybe 20 minutes beforehand. They'd given me a bag with just my team jersey in it, and I saw Team Lesnar, and next thing I was hoping is that I was on my buddy Charlie's team. So, you know, it was pretty cool. I like the guys on my team a lot, so that worked out well.
Listening to the MMA show on Sports Radio, WGAM, The Game, PJ Hewitt and Josh Nason. Talking to Chuck O'Neill, was a semifinalist on The Ultimate Fighter this season. Now, what was it like to have Brock Lesnar as your coach? What was he like to train under?
It was real interesting. You could tell he'd never really coached anyone that heavily before, like through the first half of the show. And then he started really getting a groove for it around the time I got my wild card fight. He really started, honing in and helping me out a lot, trying to give me some good pointers, good skill advice. And, you know, he really started to care. He started getting more attached to the team. And, you know, it was great then. He had a lot of situations where he had to leave and he wasn't there. I mean, and then, you know, our practices kind of got cut short. I didn't feel like I learned that much over the situation, you know, over the circumstance of being on the show, but it was definitely a good time. And, you know, when he was there, he was helping out a lot.
And not everyone gets to call him Uncle Bra like you did.
Funky Brock. I just, I don't know. It's hard for me to take people like too seriously when they're like, you know, crazy serious like he is all the time. So I tried to loosen him up a little bit and started calling Monkey Brock, and, he ended up getting a chuckle out of it towards the end, but, you know, I think he'd be reluctant to say it, but I'm sure he likes me.
So one of the things also, you know, kind of going on that, some of these guys, you know, you've been training for a while in the area, and we'll chat about that. So you're going from guys that you come up with, your coaches, your style. When you're going into this, are you just completely open, or is it tough to kind of change that mentality and almost give yourself over to a brand new set of coaches who, you know, you're only going to be with for, you know, a couple months, if that?
No, it was definitely an interesting and tough situation because you got to look at it. You know, I'm not a wrestler. I don't have a wrestling background, and I'm getting thrown into a huge wrestling camp pretty much. So, you know, what they want me to do and what I'm going to do is two different things. You know, it was definitely weird, and it's definitely hard to get their trust. You know, give them your trust, excuse me. But by the time my wild card fight came along, they were really working on a lot of stuff with me, and that's when I started opening up and really believing and having more faith in the coaching system.
Now, you mentioned you didn't have a wrestling background. What was your background? How did you get into MMA?
I was just kind of a punk, and I just decided after seeing the first season of The Ultimate Fighter, like, oh, I want to do that. And my first year or so within the MMA training, I was more so talking about it, not doing it. And, you know, I had a lackluster first year or two inside my career and took a year off and got serious. So that's where it all kind of started. It was just from me being a punk.
So talk about the Massachusetts scene. I mean, obviously you've been fighting, actually you've been fighting for a while, since April 2006, going into the show, 8-3 on a 3-fight win streak going into the show, which is good. But talk a little bit about kind of your career and where you saw it at in Massachusetts and just in the regional scene, kind of where you felt you were at before the show and where you feel you could be at, with a win this Saturday night.
You know, I started off my career at Lauzon MMA and have since moved on from there. You know, I trained primarily at City Tong and at Mass BJJ and Gracie Baja, New Hampshire, as well as South Shore Sport Fighting a couple times a week. But, you know, it's definitely crazy. It's highly contended inside New England area. I think there's a lot of great talent, a lot of great up-and-coming talent. It was kind of getting to a situation, though, it was really hard for me to get fights. So it's kind of like a crossroads, like, what the hell do I do here? You know, I got to try to break it on the show, get into the UFC or do something, but I felt that was a couple fights away from making it into the UFC on my own, so I felt the show would be the best option, and, you know, luckily I made it onto the show for the season.
Talking with Chuck O'Neill, he fights this Saturday night on the Ultimate Fighter finale, Spike TV. Let's talk about the fight. So this Saturday, you're taking on Chris Cope, one of the other semifinalists, a guy that people didn't really give a lot of credit to when he was going through the season. People just kind of kept assuming he would lose simply because of experience, but he kept winning and winning and winning. Now you find yourself up against him this Saturday. When did you first find out about the fight, and how you've been preparing for a guy that's you know, still relatively young in the sport, but a guy that seems to be just winning no matter what?
I found out about the fight first week of April. So I got right to training camp inside of Mark Delagrade's camp up at City Tom. We've had a lot of guys just kind of running away from me, trying to evade my strikes and making me really try to cut off the cage and everything. I got back to the basics with my jiu-jitsu coach, Jimmy Quinlan. just really working on a lot of different things, a lot of good control from on top and everything. You know, I know Chris inside and out and vice versa. Chris knows me very well. We worked a lot together in practice. He was on my team. His inexperience, you know, he has heart for days. It makes up for a lot of his inexperience. The kid's got a gas tank and, you know, he's a never say die attitude. So it's kind of going to be a battle of the hearts out there. So it should be a pretty interesting fight.
So I want to get your reaction. I'm going to say a statement and see what you say. This Saturday, you're fighting in the octagon in front of a very large audience on the undercard of Pettis and Guida. I mean, how does that feel to actually be saying that you're going to be fighting in the UFC this Saturday night?
It's a dream come true, man. You know, and through the whole experience of doing my pre-fight interviews and, you know, the whole photo shoots and everything, you know, I'm living within my dream and I love it and I appreciate every minute of it. And this is my moment. This is my moment for life, and I'm just going to keep it going.
Sports Radio WGAM, The Game, PJ Hewitt and Josh Nason here on the MMA show. Now, we are in the heart of Boston Bruins country, Chuck. Now, you grew up in the area. Do you have a chance? I know you're training a lot, but do you have a chance to follow the Boston sports teams? Were you a fan growing up?
Yeah, I was a big like Celtics and Red Sox fan. I never really got into hockey much, but you know, the Bruins seem to be doing pretty well. I'm still not really watching, I'm going to be honest. So I'm a huge Patriots fan too, so hopefully there's no NFL lockout this year.
Well, that's good. So I guess I can't get a prediction from you, because if the Boston Bruins can come back and beat the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, I really don't know too much about hockey, so I mean, I guess they'll score a touchdown or something.
So, speaking of, you know, hockey's obviously, there's a, you know, we saw the other night in game one, there's a lot of aggression there, a lot of cheap shots and things like that. One of the most emotional parts of the season was Tony Ferguson, the ninth episode, talking a lot of trash to a guy that you consider a really close friend, and Charlie Rader. Obviously, we saw what we saw on TV, but the emotion of that segment, I felt it at home watching within 10 minutes. I can't imagine what it was like in the house when he was essentially saying some things to a guy that you probably shouldn't say in any situation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he totally stepped over the line. You can blame alcohol all you want, but I'm a firm believer of, you know, a drunken man's words or a sober man's thoughts. And, I mean, that stuff happens, and it's ugly, but it happens. And, you know, it was a lot worse than it actually showed on the show. He actually went up to Zach Davis that day after Zach was told he can never fight again and said, hey, what's with your eye? What's that, an effing joke? You know, it got really ugly. He went up to everybody from Shamar to, you know, to Ryan, to throwing Nordine on the ground. He got in my face. I put my hands by my side and said, go ahead and hit me, or we could do it 5 days from now. It was stupid. He was belligerent and he was out of control. And, you know, it was total lack of respect for himself and for everyone else in that house.
One other person I did want to ask you about, cause I know that you kind of were wondering what he was talking about. Len Bentley, especially when you got the shot in the wild card fight, and Len just kind of was basically your face saying, well, that should have been me. This is a guy that's on your team.
Yeah. Len was an interesting guy. You know, Len has been through a lot in life. He's an interesting guy, to say the least. He kind of lives in a fantasy world at times. He doesn't mean bad by anybody, but, man, he can tell a lot of stories, and he just go on and on and on to anyone that would listen, and we kind of would all play a game. When he started telling a story, we'd just pretend to sleep. So I couldn't even tell you half the stuff he told to us throughout the season, but that's all I can say. He's an interesting guy, and I found it absolutely hilarious, the episode where he held Daniel White's hand for about an hour. I mean, that was awkward as hell.
Well, speaking of interesting guys, we think you're an interesting guy, and obviously you have a lot of stuff to say. You're starting to grow your Twitter base now, so I'll give you a chance to, you know, talk about any Twitter, Facebook, sponsors, anything like that. It's your time to shine.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at Chuck O'Neill MMA. You can find me up on Facebook on my fan page at Chuck Cold Steel O'Neill. Big sponsor, thank you, to smartpowders.com. They've helped me a lot out with my supplements and everything. You know, I can't thank my head training partner, Jimmy Quinlan, enough. He's done so much for me. He's an absolute monster on the mat and just, you know, putting together game plans. And thanks to all my team at City Tongue Boston, Mass BJJ, Gracie Baja, New Hampshire, and South Shore Sport Fighting. So if I missed anyone, sorry, but thank you.
This Saturday, Chuck O'Neill takes on Chris Cope at the card for the Ultimate Fighter finale. You can see it live on Spike TV. You don't have to pay for it, you cheapskates. DVR it. Chuck O'Neill, thanks a lot and best of luck.
Thank you. One more thing.
You can't get any better than that. Chuck O'Neill joining us tonight in the WGAM MMA show. We're going to hit a break. We have breaking news after the break. Literally breaking news. This is real stuff. You're listening to the MMA show on Sports Radio WGAM, The Game. back on the WJM MMA show. Final segment of the night this Tuesday, June 2nd. If you're just joining us, I always say this, shame on you. We talked about UFC 130 in the opening segment, talked about GSP Nick Diaz being set for October. We had a great interview in our second segment with Chuck O'Neill, who fights this Saturday night on the Ultimate Fighter Finale show. We'll actually preview that. However, PJ, we have breaking news. Dateline. No, I'm just kidding. Anthony, we were just talking about Rick Story a little while ago, and Rick Story is part of our breaking news. Anthony Johnson, who was set to fight Nate Marquardt on the UFC on Versus card later in June, actually June 26th, UFC's debut in Pittsburgh. Anthony Johnson has hurt his right shoulder, and he is off that card. Taking his place, the aforementioned Rick Story, our buddy here in the WGAM MMA show. Rick Story, Nate Marquardt, main eventing UFC on Versus 4, June 26th.
It's a big step for Rick Story if he can get this fight over Nate Marquardt. It's a really, really tough challenge. We talked about it might be time for the UFC to match him up with a guy like that. Well, they did. Marquardt is very tough.
I think they heard us.
Yeah,
I think
they're listening. Said, all right.
Like, let's do this right now. Let's do this right now. Marquardt's debut at 170 in the UFC, dropping down from 185. Really interesting fight. So, yeah, I'm stoked for this. So, good stuff. Just breaking within the last, like, half an hour or so. Rick Story, Nate Marquardt, June 26th, UFC on Versus 4. So let's chat a little bit about the Ultimate Fighter Finale show this Saturday night, live and free on Spike TV. Really interesting card for a lot of reasons. We'll get right into it. Ramzy Najm, Tony Ferguson in the main event or co-main event. I'm not sure who's going to be positioned where. The two finalists from this season's Ultimate Fighter, one Junior Dos Santos guy, one Brock guy. Najm, Ferguson, who you got?
I think... I really don't know yet. I really want to root for Najm because of the whole Tony Ferguson thing, but I think Tony Ferguson's a little bit more complete of a fighter, and I think he's probably going to end up getting the victory there, but it should be a really good fight.
When I was doing a recap last night of the episode, the first thing that really came to mind was that these are the two guys that should have won.
Yeah.
No offense to Chuck O'Neill, we talked to earlier, but skill level, where they're at, they look like finalists in those semifinal fights. And I think that's what you want to see. Ferguson as a striker is amazing. He showed precision in that O'Neill fight, lit him up, the leg kicks. I think he's got that full package. Najm, he's a guy that can take you down. He wants to submit you, but showed some strikes against Cope. I wonder if a little bit of that might be because Cope is a little bit inexperienced, so Najm may have looked a little bit better. I think it's going to be a great fight. I'm going to pick Ferguson to win by second round TKO. And I think he's going to do okay. He's going to be an interesting guy to watch, but he's got that look. We'll see how the other side of this works. Obviously, he didn't look good in the Ultimate Fighter show. He had some interesting comments that maybe we'll get to another time, but look up his tough blog that he did for SB Nation, SBNation.com MMA. He did a really interesting post after last night's show. It gives you a little bit more insight. It's interesting, to say the least. But I'm going to pick Ferguson. What was your pick again?
Ferguson.
Ferguson as
yep.
well. The real main event of the night, Clay Guida, Anthony Pettis, a fight that every hardcore fan wants to see. I'm excited for this. What do you think?
Well, Anthony Pettis coming off that awesome, phenomenal, best ever MMA kick.
Back in December
against Ben Henderson. It has been, but Clay Guida's a guy who has really, we talk about guys grinding it out to get wins. So he's a guy who's grinded out his career, was up and down a little bit, has put together a string of some really good wins. He's definitely going to be the crowd favorite here. Everybody loves this guy, including me, and I think he comes out on top there.
I'm going to pick Anthony Pettis in this by unanimous decision. Simply because this is going to be an awesome fight. I hope it lives up to the billing, because if so, this is going to be great. Guida could...
Really exciting fighters.
Yeah, two guys. Guida's is really kind of this career resurgence in a way. Pettis is a guy that is just... He's kind of hitting that mark. It's going to be a great test for him. You couldn't ask for a better test at this stage of your career. So I'm going to pick Pettis to win by unanimous decision. It's going to be a fight of the year candidate. That's my prediction. Third fight, a fight I would entitle, Where Did These Guys Come From? former Ultimate Fighter competitors Ed Herman and Tim Crater, both guys coming off really long injury layoffs. Herman hasn't fought since, I think it was 2009.
Crater August 29th, 2009.
Crater has also not fought in a while. Two veterans, in a sense, and then just, it'll be interesting to see. I really... I guess I'll pick Crater, but this could go either way simply because of the inactivity is kind of the X factor here.
Yeah, and Ed Herman coming off, he's lost three of his last four fights, and we mentioned August 29, 2009 at UFC 102 was his last fight. It was a TKO stopped because of his injury against Aaron Simpson. Tim Crater also coming off a loss, but before that, he had put together, let's see, six wins in a row. His last fight, September 16th, 2009, so almost as long as a layoff. Mm. And that was a Nate Quarry loss, a unanimous decision at UFC Fight Night 19, Diaz versus Gillard. I really don't know enough about these guys. I'll probably post on WGAMMMA.blogspot.com. I'll post my prediction for that fight tomorrow. I got to do a little more research.
Now, I was talking earlier bashing the 205-pound division. They need some guys. Interesting name, Kyle Kingsbury, another former Ultimate Fighter competitor, looked really great in his last fight. Has completely reshaped his body. A lot of people have questions because of who he's working with. Victor Conte, formerly of Belco, a.k.a. the Barry Bonds guy, if you want to say that. So kind of interesting who he's working with. Looks great. Performed great in his last fight. Fighting guy Fabio Maldonado. I'm going to pick Kingsbury simply because I don't know a lot about Maldonado. But if Kingsbury can get in a good role, he's a guy that could turn some heads here in 205.
Yeah, Maldonado made his UFC debut at UFC 120 against James McSweeney and won by TKO after 48 seconds of round three. Hmm. I don't remember the fight, but again, that's one of those ones. And Kingsbury has three wins in a row, his last fight at UFC 126 in February, TKO over Ricardo Romero. Hmm.
And finally, round out the main televised card, our man, the guy joining us tonight, Chuck O'Neill, taking on Chris Cope. No question about it. Cold steel, Chuck O'Neill. I'll pick him via, you know what? I'm going to pick him via first round TKO. I think that Cope is still a little bit inexperienced, and if he gets into a school and really gets after it, we could see him again. But O'Neill, I think he's going to have something to prove, and I think first round TKO for our buddy.
I agree. I'll take Chuck O'Neill as well. Chris Cope is a guy who really got on my nerves watching the show with that stupid poor man's Ric Flair woo that he was doing the whole time. And Chuck O'Neill, at the end of our interview with him, did the same thing, kind of just a little jab at him. And yeah, I really hope he hits him hard and shuts him up because that thing is so annoying.
Looking at the untelevised card or the non...
Some good fighters on the preliminary card, too. I'm going to assume they'll be on Facebook.
There's not announced that yet. I would assume in some way, and obviously some of these hopefully will find their way to TV depending on the outcomes of the main show. Interesting names, Jeremy Stevens versus Danny Downs, lightweight fight. Really interesting two guys that are just, they get after it. You know, Jeremy Stevens, little evil, not little evil,
little heathen.
Think of Jens Pulver. So that should be a good fight. Local guy, Massachusetts guy, Josh Grispy versus George Roop. Josh Grispy almost fought Jose Aldo for the first ever UFC featherweight championship fight. And now he's on the undercard spike show. He really needs a big comeback after his last fight. Two guys competed on this season's Ultimate Fighter, Ryan McGillivray versus Shamar Bailey. Another fight, Clay Harvison versus Justin Edwards. So those are two underneath fights of guys that are getting rewarded for their efforts on the show. Big surprise, Scott Jorgensen buried on this card for some reason, fighting against Ken Stone, another local guy. And surprisingly about Scott Jorgensen, he's a guy that it was headlining WEC shows, really fun to watch, energetic, but he's buried on this card.
Yeah, his last fight was at WEC 53. It was a unanimous decision loss to Dominic Cruz, and this is his UFC debut. So I guess the UFC wants to kind of test him a little bit, but before that had rattled off five wins in a row, beat Brad Pickett. Who else? Antonio Benuelos. Benuelos. Yep. This is his last two wins. So, yeah, hopefully that fight, if that fight's interesting, I'd like to see that because Jorgensen's a very interesting fighter.
And round out the card, Ruben Duran versus Francisco de Rivera. So look for those fights on Facebook to see if they're there. Obviously, you go facebook.com/UFC, and you'll be able to find those. So that's going to be a really fun show. I'm really excited to see this.
I think so. And I think it'll obviously it's not a pay-per-view, so it might generate some interest, especially coming off last week. But this is from last week with a bunch of bigger guys, not necessarily really super exciting fighters, and this is a lot of lighter weight classes, and it should be a better card. Real quick before we're getting out of here in just about a minute, but there's another fight going on this week.
Oh.
Another man making his MMA debut.
Do tell.
He is a former National League hockey player in that of Donald Brashear. Played a lot for, played in Vancouver and played in Edmonton, I think, and also Philadelphia. He was going to be making his MMA debut up in Canada. It was Patrick Cote is the headliner of that fight. Mm-hmm. He was scheduled to fight a man named Martin Trempe. Trempe had to back out of that fight because of a collarbone injury. They set up another guy, Steve Bégin, not to be confused with the NHL player, Steve Bégin, who played for the Boston Bruins. He had to back out. He is now on the third guy. His name is Matthew Bergeron out of Sherbrooke, Quebec, Canada. I'm just going to go ahead and say Donald Brashear wins this.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. You know, he's got a boxing background. He's had amateur boxing fights. He had 250-something fights in his National Hockey League career, so it'll be interesting.
If you missed any of tonight's show, you can check in with us at WGAMradio.com. Show will be archived and up in a little bit. Share with your friends. Tell other people about it. We'd love to get more listeners. And eventually, one of these days, we'll do call-ins and all that good stuff. We talked about UFC 130. We previewed this Saturday's event live on Spike TV. Big thanks to Chuck O'Neill joining us. He fights this Saturday against Chris Cope, Massachusetts guy, so you got to support him. And overall, it's a busy few weeks for the UFC. So for PJ Hewitt, I'm Josh Nason. This has been the WGAM MMA show. And remember, until next time, keep your chin down, keep your hands up. Good night.